Players want to give themselves a chance here in the ninth inning. And it looks like they will send Freeman back over to his spot at second base. So all good to go, and we will get back to work here in the top of the ninth. Rafters leading 7-5. Hiroto Kobayashi up at the plate. He's a right-handed hitting right fielder for the Rafters, so still the righty-righty matchup. And working on the mound, Ben Caston trying to go through 2 2/3 innings. Here's the 1-2. It's hit out towards left center field, running up on it. It won't be caught by the center fielder, Rex Watson. Instead, it gets down, and Kobayashi keeps his hitting streak alive in the ninth inning. Now up to 6 games after he's able to say that, I really thought I was going to have jinxed it earlier. Not quite. Kobayashi avoids the jinx. And now it brings up Hayden Carlson to the plate with a runner on first and two away, and he sends this one sky high in the air down the left field line, reaching out towards left field, going at the wall. This one is out of here! Hayden Carlson, his fourth hit of the game, and it's a moonshot to left field! Over 330 feet to left, and the Rafters lead by 4! 9-2-5! We're working a job out here. Dolly Parton is singing it loud and clear. 2-run home run. Hayden Carlson, have yourself a game. Ties the Rafters season high in hits. Sends home Hiroto Kobayashi. And that was a pitch left a little bit too much over the plate by Ben Caston. And he's still working out here against Royce Clayton Jr. For pitch to him is taken for ball number one. So a 1-0 count, and the pitch in there is called for a strike. It's now 1-1. Royce Clayton Jr. is 3-for-4 in the game. He drew a walk back in the seventh inning. 1-1 count. It's high for ball number two. 2-1. Prior to this point in the seventh inning, his last time up, he drew a walk in the seventh, struck out looking in the sixth, but prior to that, he was 3-for-3. That pitch misses low. It's now 3-1. Layton doubled in the fifth. He singled in the third and in the first. Takes this pitch right at the letters for strike number two. It's now a full count. 3-2. Two away, bases empty in the top of the ninth, but the Rafters leading 9-5 thanks to the 2-run homer from Hayden Carlson. And this pitch is going to miss inside, so Clayton is on base for the fifth time today. Takes the walk there. He's on to first base, and it brings up Noah Hatta to the plate with two away and a runner on first in the top of the ninth. Rafters trying to add to their 4-run lead. Hatta, the left-handed hitting center fielder, it's a lefty-righty matchup. First pitch on the way, it misses low for ball number one. Now a 1-0 count, and Hatta has struggled today. It's his first game, and he didn't arrive to Wisconsin Rapids until last night. 1-0 count. This one's hit out towards center field pretty well on the run back, but now slowing down, it will be caught in center field by Rex Watson, and that does it for the ninth inning. But the Rafters score the 2 runs on 2 hits, including the home run from Hayden Carlson. And with no errors that inning, the Rafters leave 1 on base. We head to the bottom of the ninth. Rafters up 9-5 here on WFHR Wisconsin Rapids.
Keeping you connected to your local community with good news and great conversation. Here's Terry Barr with the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's Summerfest's third and final round of dates. Can you believe it? We've again made some personal picks for you to enjoy the big gig along Milwaukee's Lakeshore this holiday weekend. Let's start with the music, and some great throwbacks are playing, including Richard Marx, the band Chicago, Fountains of Wayne, even Sebastian Bach. Find the full list of artists on the more than 12 stages at summerfest.com. Friday night, Johnsonville is hosting a huge party for America's 249th birthday. Don't miss singing, cake, and fireworks to cap off the celebration. And here's what I call your new must-do. Grab a free Big Win ticket at the gate on Saturday. You could walk away with more money than you arrived with. $1 million up for grabs. No kidding. Wishing you a happy holiday. Until next time, I'm Terry Barr.
You're cruising along Highway 54, you're jamming out to your favorite song, you slow down for a red light when out your passenger window, another car revs their engine wanting you to race. Now, at first you're like, no, I can't. But before you finish your thought, the light changes green, your foot slams the gas, your adrenaline is surging until your check engine light goes on. And reality strikes. Have fun again in your vehicle. Work with the team at Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep.
This one goes out to the elder millennials. We're not as flashy as those other millennials and not as grungy as Gen X, but our music deserves another listen. Burn Before Listening features hits, no, we can't read a poker face. Deep cuts, and some authentic cringe. This is how you remind. From 2000 to 2009, Burn Before Listening on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, Sundays at 9 p.m.
Into the bottom of the ninth, the Rafters up 9-5, and well, the Rafters are trying to get things rolling along with their first win of the second half, but they have to close it out, and they are turning to the same pitcher from the eighth inning, Jack Wiesinger, who the first pitch is for strike number one. TP Wentworth at the plate, left-handed hitting right fielder. 0-1 count. This one is smoked high in the air towards right field. Maybe a little too high, and running up on it, Kobayashi. He's under it and makes the catch for out number one. Rafters now two outs away from the win, and Jack Wiesinger looking for his first save of the season. Came in to relieve Preston Steiner, and well, it was a 7-4 game at that point in time, and he allowed the RBI single from Matt Hansen. Actually, it was 7-3 at that time. There was an error on the throw down to second, and then the RBI single from Hansen, as this pitch from Nate McHugh is a swing and a miss for strike number one. And well, it was a 7-3 game, but did have the runners on the bases, which meant that the tying runner was on deck or closer. 0-1 count, misses inside for ball number one, a 1-1 count. So even though the lead is up to four runs right now, Wiesinger in line for the save and trying to finish it off. 1-1 the count. He looks home and now brings the pitch in, but it misses high and tight for ball number two, and McHugh had to lean out of the way. So a 2-1 count. McHugh 1-for-4 in the game, and he struck out swinging back in the eighth inning. That was his last time up. Prior to that, he singled in the sixth. Now a 2-1 count coming home. Righty-righty matchup. Hit towards right field and over the head of the leaping second baseman, Madden Akko. Picked up by Kobayashi. He'll throw it in and keep the runner over there on first. So don't count out the Dock Spiders just yet. Trying to make the comeback here, and it's up to Rex Watson to see what he can do. Watson, the left-handed hitting center fielder for the Dock Spiders, stepping up to the plate. He's got a runner on first with one out in the bottom of the ninth. Rafters leading 9-5. Watson from the University of San Diego, native of Manteca, California. Lefty-righty matchup with Wiesinger on the mound. First pitch, misses low for ball number one. And Watson up for the fifth time today. He is 2-for-4. Runner on first base, Nate McHugh. Not getting too much of a leadoff over there, but seems ready to go. 1-0 count. It misses low and bounces a little bit in front of Barajas, but he keeps it close enough to have the runner stay at first. 2-0 the count. Sam Pease is on deck. And Pease, hoping that he won't be the last out of the game. But Watson, up to him to see what situation he comes up in. 2-0 count. It's a swing and a foul ball back to the backstop to bring it 2-1. Watson singled in the eighth inning his last time up. Came around to score in that inning as well. Struck out swinging in the sixth, though, and reached on an error in the fourth. Also singled in the second inning. Has a 2-1 count here with one away. Wiesinger nods home, brings it, but it misses high and outside for ball number three. 3-1 the count. Watson is more than okay with a walk. Down four runs, the Dock Spiders need a lot to come back into this one. 3-1, the pitch comes home, and that one misses high for ball number four, and there's that walk I was talking about. Keeps pushing the line forward, and that means that the batter on deck represents the tying run. And before that, we will get a pinch hitter. And the pinch hitter for Sam Pease is Landon Mensick. So Mensick coming in for Pease. And Mensick, the right-handed hitting player from Xavier University, batting 300 this season. He's got 14 RBIs, has one runner in scoring position and another on first. First pitch on the way, it's upstairs for ball number one. 1-0 the count. And Mensick coming in after Pease went 0-2 with two walks. 1-0 count, Wiesinger's got to find his location. Breaking ball drops in there for strike number one. Good spot to find and get the call. On deck, Taylor Freeman. He does represent the tying run right now, but Wiesinger hoping to get to him with two outs. 1-1 count, drops a little bit high for ball number two. 2-1 count, not quite enough break there. Well, a little too late of break, I should say. 2-1 count with one away. Wiesinger, talked about him from Pomona Pitzer. Had some key moments there and trying to have a key moment here. That pitch, though, misses high for ball number three. And for the Rafters here, they might have to get another arm warmed up. Wiesinger up to 32 pitches in the game. And if he's not able to control the stuff here, they might have to make a move. 3-1 count on the way, and that time it drops in there. Count rolls full. So a 3-2 count with runners on first and second. Rafters up 9-5 in the bottom of the ninth. The Rafters took that 9-5 lead thanks to a two-run home run from Hayden Carlson. Swing and a miss here from Landon Mensick. That is strike number three and a big out number two. Brings up Taylor Freeman to the plate with two outs and two on, down four in the bottom of the ninth. Down to their last out, Wiesinger is going to be given the opportunity for the 1-2/3 inning save. Righty-righty matchup. Wiesinger brings the leg up, fires it home, and it's fouled back by Freeman. Freeman up for the fifth time today. He is 1-for-3. Walked back in the eighth inning, singled in the sixth. Those are his last two plate appearances. But prior to that, it was a 6-4-3 double play and a strikeout looking. 0-1 count, misses low for ball one. And looking at Taylor Freeman from Lawrence University, he's coming into a tough situation. He's got two outs with a runner in scoring position. 1-1 count, sent up the middle, takes a weird hop off the grass. Over to shortstop, Carlson's there, he'll throw to first, got him in time. Rafters win it. They get their first win of the second half, and they split the series. They're back up to 500, and it's the first time that the Rafters this season have been 500 outside of the first day of the year. So a big-time win here, and the Rafters trying to get some momentum. They are now 3-1 over the last four games and feeling good about the way things go. Final score, 9-5. In that ninth inning, no runs on the one hit. There were no errors, and there were two left on base. Post-game show comes up next. It's a Good News Wednesday night. Thanks for tuning in, guys, and make sure to stick around as we recap how it happened, take a look back at the numbers, and, of course, preview next game. All coming up on the post-game show here on WFHR Wisconsin Rapids.
Hey, baseball fans. Are you ready to swing for the fences in your career instead of warming the bench? By joining Skyward's award-winning team, you'll put education technology solutions into the hands of school leaders who serve over 7 million students around the world. Innovation, collaboration, and fun are all a part of the Skyward culture. So what are you waiting for? Step up to the plate and apply today at www.skyward.com/careers.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Now, let's get back to exciting Rafters baseball here on WFHR.
The Rafters take game number two of the second half, game number two of the series against Fond du Lac. It's a 9-5 victory, and they now have a positive run differential of +5 on the year, despite a 2-4 record against the Dock Spiders. And so things going their way a little bit more here now and trying to keep things rolling that way. We'll see how the rest of the season continues. The Rafters have another big one coming up as they will be taking on the Lakeshore Chinooks tomorrow, and that's part of a two-game series. So a little bit of interesting timing on the Friday game. It's 3:05 p.m. on Friday, so hopefully you have that scheduled, as the Rafters are playing a little bit earlier on that day than normal. And then on Saturday, and that, of course, on Friday, is the July 4th game. So a lot of excitement for that one. And then on Saturday, it's also a little bit earlier over in Madison. It's at 6:05, so 30 minutes earlier. A couple of schedule changes. I'll get to that in a little bit. But before we do that, let's go ahead and take a look back at how it all happened. Early on, it was a pitcher's duel, to say the least. Jeremy Jones going up against Stormy Rhodes, and Jones would end up going four innings, but he allowed the first run of the game in the third inning. Bottom of the third comes around. He allows a one-out double to James Hankerson Jr., and then a two-out RBI double from T.P. Wentworth sends home Hankerson to make it 1-0. From there, Jones would head through four complete innings, allowing just that one run. He struck out six batters on 80 pitches. Well, on the other side, Stormy Rhodes, he threw 92 pitches and went through four and a third innings. He had a shutout first four innings, but back in the fifth inning, didn't quite go his way. He issued a 4-3 ground out to start things off, but then a single, a double, and a walk, and he had to be pulled from the game. And with the bases loaded, now with the bases loaded after Hayden Carlson had come home on a wild pitch, or on a passed ball, I should say, Royce Clayton Jr. was on third, Noah Hata on first base, an RBI double from Junior Barajas gave the Rafters a 2-1 lead in the top of the fifth. From there, they would score another two runs in the sixth inning thanks to a 2-RBI single from Hayden Carlson. Carlson's going to be a name that you hear a lot tonight. And in the seventh inning, the Rafters would add even more to their lead. They went up 7-1 thanks to three runs in the seventh. Started with an RBI hit by pitch from Luke Skinner with the bases loaded, then an RBI sac fly from Kobayashi before another RBI single from Hayden Carlson. It was his third hit of the game, and that made it 7-1. Eighth inning comes around, and then, watch out for Fond du Lac. They start coming back. In the eighth inning, they score four runs, a 2-RBI single from Tommy Guggins, an error, and an RBI single from Matt Hansen sent home the four runs. That made it a 7-5 ballgame, but ninth inning comes around, a And guess who comes up clutch again? It was Hayden Carlson. Two-run shot to left field, and it was a moonshot at that. I'm surprised it didn't knock out one of the stars in the skies. And, well, it ended up over the left field wall and put the Rafters up 9-5. And in the bottom of the ninth, Jack Wiesinger back out there trying to lock down the save. He gets it by going with the three outs in the inning. So final score, Rafters win it 9-5. Taking a look back at the stats, it was a good game from Trevor Moik. He went 2 1/3 innings as a reliever, didn't allow a run, allowed just 3 hits and 2 walks with 4 strikeouts. He followed up Jeremy Jones, who went 4 innings, 1 run allowed on 2 walks, 4 hits and 6 strikeouts. Ashton Poole went 1 inning, allowed 1 run. Wasn't Preston Steiner's best game, but Jack Wiesinger came in 1 2/3 innings, no runs on his line, and allowed the 3 strikeouts. On the offensive side for the Rafters, a 3-for-4 game from Royce Clayton Jr. He drew 2 walks as well. Great game from him. 2-for-5 from Junior Barajas. Both of his hits were doubles. He's got 3 hits this season. All 3 of them are for extra bases. And all 3 of them doubles at that. Behind him, Landon Gaz reached base 4 times. He went 1-for-2 with 2 walks and a hit by pitch. And Hayden Carlson, of course, maybe the headline of the game. 5 RBIs. He had 4 hits, 4-for-5 in the game. And, of course, the home run in the ninth inning. So the Rafters win it 9-5. And looking ahead towards next game, the Rafters are hosting each of the next 2 against the Chinooks. Tomorrow's matchup is going to be Seth Spencer, the lefty on the mound for the Rafters, against the righty Nate Ciemne for the Chinooks. That's what we're looking at, and Spencer, he's been struggling a little bit as of late. Last appearance, not too bad for him, and hoping to continue to improve. Nate Ciemne on the other side, 1-0 this season with a 4.29 ERA for Lakeshore. So that game will be at 6:35 p.m. Central Time, and the pregame show will start here on WFHR at 6:20. But that's going to do it from our broadcast tonight. So a big thank you to all of you for tuning in. Shout out to the Fond du Lac Dock Spiders for hosting us as always. And, of course, to our pregame guest, Junior Barajas, although you'll get to hear from him tomorrow with our pregame show because we did not, unfortunately, get to play his pregame interview today. So you'll get to hear him tomorrow, but a big thank you to him for doing it today anyways. So that's going to do it from our broadcast tonight, and a big shout out once more to you, our fans of the Wisconsin Rapids Rafters. But one final time, Rafters win it. It's good news on the Wednesday night, 9-5, the final score. From myself, Austin Thomas, and from the rest of the Wisconsin Rapids Rafters, thank you and have a great rest of your night.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board. Coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine, where you can join us. Call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter.
So if you're listening to this as a podcast, you wouldn't have heard the intro music, but I'll tell you, the name of it was Metallica, Hero of the Day with the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra, because I'm a nerd and knew that off the top of my head.
You knew it instantaneously.
Yep, knew it instantaneously.
That was a big hit for Mr. Bach over here.
Love Metallica.
Yes, you can always join us at 855-752-4842. I want to give a shout out to our friend and colleague, Terry Barr, here at Civic Media. We call her the genie of just about everything.
Yeah.
She's involved with our music show on weekends, Max Inc., which has won all kinds of awards in Madison and around the state. And Terry also does a great job in our news department. And so if you miss things from our show, sometimes she'll grab a story that we did. Like earlier this week, we talked to Matt from We Got This Garden.
Yes.
And she took a little...
Alex
from We Got This Garden. And it's a program in Milwaukee that helps inner city kids get involved with gardening, and they get paid for it. And it's a really great program. But she grabbed that, and then she turns it into a news story and puts it on our website. Yes. Terry does great. The woman's won Emmys.
Yeah, that's another one of those individuals here at the company. We're like, hey, when do you sleep?
Seriously. She is involved in so much stuff. And just about like everybody here at Civic Media. But I want to give a special shout out to Terry because she does such a great job for us. And check out, check that out. Go to civicmedia.us and click on news.
Yep. You can find, and you'll find all sorts of great news stories from all of our correspondents all over the state. Local news, statewide news. Brittany Merlot is another one, multi-award winner, writes wonderful stories about the environment and the weather and like big weather topics, like whether it's natural disasters or heat waves or bugs or whatever.
You name it.
Yeah, we've got a great dedicated staff that you may hear on the radio once in a while, but they are behind the scenes making things work.
Working their butts.
Oh, yeah.
So shout out to everybody and shout out to Terry. Thank you so much for that. Hey, we mentioned this yesterday very briefly because some of the things that got snuck into this budget bill that no one seems to be aware of.
Yeah.
And how did it get there? We don't know. It was just airdropped in there. Someone put it in the budget. Nobody's claiming it.
Well, when we went to bed, then the magical elves came out and started writing proposals.
And put things in this budget.
And then all of our shoes were fixed, too. And then we woke up and they were gone.
And we had new heels. It was amazing. So we mentioned this Garden of Heroes.
Yeah.
Garden of Heroes. $40 million of taxpayer money we're going to shell out for a sculpture garden. Representative Joe Neguse was questioning one of the Trump administration's officials about this yesterday. Calvin, I believe we have that clip. Can you play that, please?
What about the Garden of Heroes? $40 million for President Trump's Garden of Heroes. Can't we? Why not just say, you know what? We've got a huge deficit.
Yeah.
And that's probably not the most prudent way to spend our taxpayer dollars. Let's just reallocate that $40 million. That's a bridge too far for you?
Well, I think there's not a bill that I've read and reviewed since I've been a member of Congress, certainly since I've been the budget chair, that I felt lived up perfectly to what I thought we ought to do in stewardship of tax dollars.
And what I thought
was consistent with the constitutional scope and
I hear you, Chair, of this federal government. You could understand our struggle because, as I said, last 7 weeks, you've testified a few times here. Every time you testify, this bill gets more expensive.
Yeah.
And the answer is always, well, down the road, you know, of course, we could address this and there are ways in which we can try to identify potential places where funding, where potential cuts can be identified and so on and so forth. Here is an example right in front of you. $40 million. You could take care of that today. There's an amendment, I believe, that was submitted. You could rule that in order and say, you know what? We're going to put that $40 million towards deficit reduction.
Something.
If you're serious about wanting to address the fiscal health of the country.
Yeah. Yeah. $40 million. We could use that someplace else.
And he was speaking to Congressman Jody Arrington from Texas, who is the chair of the budget committee. Yeah. And I love that. Like this seems like a no-brainer to me. $40 million for 250 statues, and it's going in the White House, right?
I believe it's going to go somewhere in South Dakota. Politico says the plan is to unveil 250 life-sized statues in time for America's 250th birthday next year on the 4th of July.
How are they going to get all those made?
Well, that's kind of a problem because apparently we don't have enough sculptors in this country to get this done. Again, gaming out the idea.
Yeah.
Here's the thought. What will happen if we do this? How will we make this happen? Where's it going to go? Who's going to sculpt them? How are we going to get them made? How's this going to happen? Yeah, no, it's just like, we want $40 million for a statue garden. It'll be great.
You had 249 years to plan this. You could have done it a long time ago. But
they could have been building them up to, making them up to this point.
Also, what do you want to bet they're going to farm some of these statues out to other countries?
China.
Maybe China. We'll find out more in 2 weeks what the plan is. But it goes back to that notion of, do you think we can get rid of it? Do you think it's a problem that we have deficit spending and you want to spend $40 million on a Garden of Heroes? I'm going to say that again, Gardens of Heroes, which sounds like something you wrote of a Thor movie. Can't say yes or no to it. Can't say, yeah, it's great. I love it. Let's do it. Let's make two of them. Can't say no. Can't say, yeah, you're right. This is a ridiculous waste of money.
I don't know why you can't say no.
You can, but they can't.
The plan calls for a suitable space to be identified, which is yet to happen, although South Dakota has offered a spot near Mount Rushmore.
Gross.
Because that's what he wants.
We only need enough time to make one statue, everybody.
We got news coming up next, and then some recombobulating on the other side with Dan Schaefer. Stay with us. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids Home for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
CBS News Brief. Some action in the House involving a procedural vote as President Trump urges passage of his tax and spending bill. He's been trying to round up votes from Republican holdouts. House Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries.
All we need are four House Republicans to join us in defense of their constituents who will suffer mightily from this bill.
Bail denied for Sean Diddy Combs, who's been convicted of two prostitution-related counts, but acquitted of sex trafficking and racketeering. His lawyer, Mark Aragos.
He's thankful, he's relieved, and he thanks the jurors.
Brian Koberger pleads guilty to murder in the stabbings of four University of Idaho students. He avoids the death penalty and receives life in prison without parole. CBS's Carter Evans.
He looked at the prosecutor when the prosecutor was speaking. He looked at the judge when the judge was speaking. He wasn't nodding. He really didn't show any emotion at all.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
A doubleheader in New York. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball, it's the Brewers and the Mets tonight in Game 2 of their doubleheader at Citibank Field in Queens. In Game 1, home runs today for the Brewers by Sal Frelick, Isaac Collins with his fifth of the season. Then, top of the sixth, bases loaded. Milwaukee's Joey Ortiz with his second at bat.
There's a drive deep into left field, and it is a grand slam for Joey Ortiz. And then some. The Brewers have blown it open in the sixth inning.
It was Ortiz's first career grand slam as the Brewers beat the Mets 7-2. Did it help they held the Mets to just two hits?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you see it from the offense when the starting pitcher is doing what he can out there to get us back in to go swing. I mean, the offense usually stays locked in all game, and the process is more important than the results at times, so you just kind of got to grind through.
That's Brewers shortstop Joey Ortiz with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. The Devil Wears Prada is coming back, but not every cast member will return. The production started last week on Prada 2. Meryl Streep, Anne Hathaway, Emily Blunt, and Stanley Tucci are all back. Adrian Grenier, however, will not be back as Nate Cooper in the sequel. He played Anne Hathaway's love interest and a short order cook in the first film. Grenier's claim to fame is, of course, the show Entourage, but he has not done much since. In other casting news, actor Kenneth Branagh will join the production as Meryl Streep's character, Miranda Priestley's husband. There's a new action comedy that might be worth a look. Heads of State tells the story of the UK Prime Minister, played by Idris Elba, and the United States President, played by John Cena, which seems more realistic than it's ever been. The two characters butt heads but have to team up to overthrow a global plot that threatens freedom. The film is receiving a 66% on Rotten Tomatoes and an 85% audience score and can be streamed on Amazon Prime. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is brats on the grill for a tailgate, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy for tonight, maybe a stray storm, a low in the low 60s. For tomorrow, mostly sunny, hot and humid, highs upper 80s to near 90. Rain chances return for the 4th of July and the upcoming weekend. High temperatures stay in the 80s through the holiday weekend. Right now it's 73.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Madam Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway from the fabulous city of Madison.
A lot of people say, I don't like politics. It's all dirty and angry and blah, blah, blah. It's really about caring about your community, finding a way to like bring it back to people talking to each other.
Yeah.
About what is important in our place and how do we take care of each other and use the levers of government to do that. That's really what it's about.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
This is what I love, Madison. There's so many weird things. Bennett's Meadowood Country Club, which is a bar and not a country club, they have an event called Smut and Eggs. You show up for eggs and you watch a porn film while you eat breakfast. I have trouble watching a PG-13 movie when I eat breakfast. It's more of a dinner thing, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe a nice group orgy and some pasta.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Pat Kreitlow.
On Thursday, I put another candle on the old birthday cake, and I do mean old, plus Sherita Booker, Chad Holmes, Todd Alba, and Sean O'Malley.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
I'm discombobulated.
Good morning. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jay Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Sweet Calby on the board. Coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. Call or text at 855-752-4842. We'll leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up later on today, 2 to 4, the Todd Alba Show. He will be joined by Pat Kreitlow, host of Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Also, Trigvi Olsen, senior advisor at the Lincoln Project, talking about not just the state budget, but the federal budget. In second hour with Todd, what's worse, Summer Street Edition?
Summer Street Event Edition. Yes. I was like,
it's coming. Summer Street. It could be a lot of things. Todd today from 2 to 4 p.m. Delighted to be joined by Civic Media's political editor and the creator of a multi award-winning recombobulationaria, Dan Schaefer, is here. I bet you've been busy the last couple of days.
You know, as someone who lives at the intersection of state and national politics and NBA basketball, yep. it's been a very newsworthy couple days
no
here, James. I'm a little discombobulated, I must say.
Well, we're gonna talk about your new best friend a little bit later on. We'll save that. We'll leave that little tease mm-hmm. out there. Dan Schaefer is a new fan.
Yeah, I know.
He's got some pull.
Something like that.
We'll talk about that in a little bit. Let's talk, though, about budgets. We can start with the Wisconsin state budget. We did talk to Senator Kelda Royce yesterday, who called in towards the end of our show. And not all the Democrats are happy with these compromises that have been made.
Yeah, I think there is, you know, some division within the Democratic Party in Wisconsin among assembly representatives and state senators who are not sure what to make of this budget deal. The budget deal announced 5 a.m. yesterday by Tony Evers and legislative Republicans also included Senate Democrats. And I think that, to me, is really standing out as one of the most interesting pieces of this, the fact that Dianne Hesselbein, Senate Democratic Minority Leader, was invited to the table, because I don't know what kind of budget would have been signed if they did not step to the table late last week when there was kind of this impasse and they realized that the Republicans realized that they were not going to be able to pass a budget with only Republican votes. So I think that really gave, you know, Senate Democrats some certain level of leverage. They were able to notch some certain wins. But you're right. There is some disagreement about among Democrats about this bill. I got a press release this morning from a coalition of groups led by Citizen Action of Wisconsin, Wisconsin Education Association Council, Wisconsin Public Education Network, and WECAN, Corrine Hendrickson from WECAN, who I know mm-hmm. has been on the show a number of times, all encouraging state senators and representatives to vote against the budget and encouraging Tony Evers to veto the budget. So there is clearly, I think, the public education piece is one that has people most fired up against this budget. But there are a number of issues that people are looking for, hoping for more wins in this budget. A rare moment that Democrats had some measure of leverage and, you know, they got some things, but did they get enough? I think that's the big question right now.
Well, and that's the big, like, so at the risk, I'll say it out loud, at the risk of looking completely stupid, when the news came out yesterday, it was announced by Governor Evers and the Republicans, we got a press release from the Main Street Alliance that praised the compromise, and it seemed like, oh, well, because when we talked about yesterday on the show, we're like, does this feel like a win? I feel like this is a win. This feels like good stuff. And then Chris Larson comes out while we're on the air yesterday and says he's going to vote no. I saw something from Francesca Hong, who's an assembly rep or assembly member from Madison. Kelda Roys, if you listen back, I didn't expect to hear, like, she was not thrilled with it. And so it sort of took me for a loop to say, like, oh, is this bad? I feel like what the Republicans were proposing versus what was agreed upon yesterday is far and away not what I expected. Like, I was like, this seems like a trick to me. Like, well, this seems too good.
Because again, if they hadn't come to a deal, we would have reverted to the previous budget.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right. We would have gone to the previous budget, and that introduces a number of questions, you know, as the state is kind of planning things out, particularly for schools wanting to know what level of funding they're going to be able to plan for this fall. You know, there are a number of temporary workers across Wisconsin that wouldn't have funding for it. So like, it makes sense to pass a budget. I part of this process that has really frustrated me is how much of it has happened behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. And I get that they need to, you know, need to negotiate, but so much of this has happened behind closed doors. And then, like, basically 48 hours after we see the deal, less than 48 hours after we see the deal announced from Governor Evers, we're going to have people voting on it. That just doesn't, I don't think that gives enough time for public to react to a really complicated, detailed piece of legislation. It's a, you know, $111 billion, whatever the numbers on the budget are. It's a huge budget. And I think you need to have a little bit more time for people to process it and see if there needs to be some final improvements and all of that. But to get back to the point that you were making, Greg, you know, I think the wins that they were able to have in this budget for childcare, for the UW system, for a number of other capital projects, I think is pretty significant. And I mm-hmm. think, again, what I've been hearing as I've been talking to people about this negotiation is that Dianne Hesselbein, the state Senate Democratic minority leader, really did a terrific job in the negotiations once she was finally brought to the table.
And that's the big worry I have, is like, I don't have a problem with any of these reps having a problem with it. And I have no problem with them saying we want more, because I think that if Tony Evers had his druthers, he would have way more in his budget. But it's a two-part question. One, do you really think Tony Evers is going to veto this thing? And two,
no.
Is the budget at risk of losing things if the Democrats come up and start making noise and saying, well, we want more, and the Republicans just say, well, to heck with you, we're going to take out this stuff, we're going back to the drawing board, and too bad, so sad. We thought we had a deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, I think there is some different dynamics from the Assembly versus the Senate. In the Assembly, Republicans can pass a budget with only Republican votes. You know, so Assembly Democrats can make a lot of noise talking about what was missed in this budget,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, they are not going to be, you know, they're kind of out of the process for this to a certain extent.
Right.
Because Robin Voss and Assembly Republicans have the votes to pass this with only Republican votes. I do wonder if there's more they could have gotten if Hesselbein was at the table for this earlier. Because as we've been talking about this for weeks, that Steve Nass and Chris Kapinga, if we have the pronunciations on that correct, have been no votes. And so it's been the case for weeks that Senate Democrats were needed to come to the table. And as I reported last week on Civic Media, she was brought into negotiations, I believe, on Thursday. And then things happened quickly once she was brought to negotiations. And so I think she's going to be in favor of it. And there are a number of kind of more swing seat Democrats who are going to be in favor of this, mm-hmm. too. So some of the people who have expressed support include Jody Habersinikin, Kristen Alfheim, and Sarah Kieski. Well, those are three state senators who won tough races,
yep.
on new maps last fall. So I think it is significant that, you know, some of those who are in closer, more competitive districts are saying, like, let's take the win here, and we can celebrate that.
If you're just joining us, we have Dan Schaefer here. He is the political editor of Civic Media, as well as the founder and creator of the multi-award-winning Recombobulation Era. And he's recombobulating with us early this week, because we're not going to be here on Friday. And Dan, the thing I have to say is, you know, at the risk of looking, well, you know what? I don't really care about parties right now. I care about Wisconsin and democracy and the good stuff for good people. This is kind of what we always talk about, though, right? We talk about Republicans and Democrats coming together in a room, having a conversation, hashing out the problems, finding solutions, and not everyone's going to get everything they want. And the fact that they wanted to last week or a week and a half ago cut $87 million from the UW system. Yes. And now I think how much is in that between capital improvement and just funding the UW system?
Hundreds of millions.
Hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
This is compromise is not a bad word. It's a good thing. Right. And I'm not trying to invalidate the feelings of the senators and the assembly members who have a problem with this, but if we can make this one work here, what about in 2 years, the conversations we can have in 2 years? And, you know, it's not perfect. Agreed. But this is better than we were looking at a week ago.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right about that. And I think some of the things that people are upset with is there not being new funding for public education. And I think there are some groups that are just going to be dug in on that there, mm-hmm. and say that, like, we need to increase for public education. And you know, I don't know what the status of this budget would be had things not changed last week with the Senate Democrats.
Right.
And I think that to me, and you go back to all the conversations that we've had about fair maps,
yeah.
all the conversations yeah. that we had last fall about these tough districts in the state Senate. Well, we had fair maps for the first time. Half of the state Senate was up. Democrats won all five of the five most closely competitive seats in that. And it is because of that, is because the people of Wisconsin in those districts spoke with their votes and made a difference. That is the reason that this is different, because otherwise we're just looking at the same dynamic between Evers and Voss.
Exactly.
That mm-hmm. we've seen for the past three budget cycles. The only different thing here is the fact that state Senate they needed some votes from state Senate Democrats, and state Senate Democrats were invited to the table and made a real difference for Wisconsinites in this budget.
Don't ever let anybody tell you your vote doesn't count.
Correct.
Absolutely.
This is the perfect example of it.
And I would argue the point that this was where it wasn't just the last three budget cycles, but the current one, because up until last week, it was the same old Voss and Evers don't like each other. I don't care. They both sides were gone. There was nothing happening. We had the threat of
They're
going back
walk
to
away.
Yeah. And right. I'm throwing all my love and support to Dianne Hesselbein for walking in the room and probably slamming a piece of paper down and saying, "We're going to fix this right now because we look like fools." And it got done. And that is the power of just having those discussions, having the conversation, and that helps us. And you're right, Dan, there are funding measures that were not met, and there are things that were not put into the budget that need to. I'm a big mm-hmm. believer in more money for public education, but
still not expanding Medicaid here in this
right.
budget
yet right.
again,
which is
like there are some misses for
insanity
sure.
Insanity to me, but that's
yep.
that, we will probably keep talking about that forever. But it just irks me a little bit that we're not counting this as a win. And I know there's listeners probably saying, "You're wrong, Greg," and that's fine. That's
why aren't we fighting harder? Why aren't we fighting harder?
Mm-hmm. We're fighting harder after the agreement's been made. And yeah. unfortunately, assembly members weren't brought to the table. But Dianne Hesselbein was, and she got in there yeah. and she got things done. And that is fantastic. I count this as a good start.
It's a start.
Yeah,
yeah, I would agree mm-hmm. with you. And we don't have a lot of time before we go to the break, Dan, but I just want to say, isn't it by design that we push these budgets through so quickly so that no one actually knows everything that's in there? We were talking about the federal budget before you joined us, and this $40 yeah. million dollars for this statue of heroes, this garden of heroes. That's the stuff they don't want the public to know about. So let's just vote on it and get it done. Let's just get it done.
Always hate that part of the process. Get the public involved. Have these negotiations in public. You don't need to be behind closed doors all the time for this.
If you're so embarrassed you don't want to talk about it in public, that should be a sign. We're going to continue our conversation with Dan Schaefer. He is a new best friend. All the details on the other side. Stay with us. You're listening to Matt Mayer on Air on the Vast, statewide, countrywide. Pick us up globally on the app, Civic Media Radio Network. I need you to recombobulate me. Won't somebody recombobulate me?
As Wisconsin is brats on the grill for a tailgate, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Thank you. Here at the Almond Joy Factory, where tropical vibes abound, we use soft, fresh-tasting coconut.
The crunchiest almonds and delicious chocolate candy.
Ah, but do you know what our most important ingredient is?
Sometimes you feel like a nut.
Sometimes you don't.
Almond Joy's got nuts and something even way better than that. Yes, Almond Joy is made with almonds and joy.
At Hazelden Betty Ford, treating mental health isn't just about breaking old patterns. It's about braving new ones. As the leader in alcohol and drug treatment for 75 years, we know caring for addiction, anxiety, depression, and trauma goes hand in hand. We're here for you with new tools when life breaks down. Discover your path to better mental health at HazeldenBettyFord.org/Wisconsin. Sponsored by Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation.
Hi, I'm Ashley, and I want to talk to you about your business. Are you a business owner who lies awake at night worried about your business uncertainties? Do you know who your target audience is or how to reach them? Don't waste another night's sleep. Call me at 715-496-0710 so I can show you the tools and information you need. We offer radio, digital, and streaming services that will help you stand out. With my education and experience, I'll help you create a solid plan tailored for your business. Because cookie cutters are for the holidays, not for business needs. Call today and let those uncertainties melt away. 715-496-0710.
At WFHR and WIRI, our advertisers are part of our family, so come join the family by calling Ashley today at 715-496-0710.
Breaking sports radio show news coming across the ticker. In a move for the ages, 105.5 WIRI has traded for playmakers. Join us 4 to 5 Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays. Hit us in the numbers by calling with your sports takes and feelings. We'll have James, Randy, Michael, and Seth bringing you local sports coverage and news that you won't hear anywhere else. Thanks to our friends at Quality Plus Printing and Family Natural Foods. Be heard 4 to 5 every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on 105.5 WIRI's newest roster edition, Playmakers. We speak sport.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Indy Duttagupta, he is with the Center for Law and Social Policy.
The Trump administration's agenda is reducing economic growth. The programs that they're proposing cutting, like Medicaid and SNAP, especially for kids, actually more than pay for themselves. So we are really looking at a tough long-term economic outlook entirely created by the current policymakers.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m. As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
I'm so happy. Good morning. Welcome back to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Box, Sweet Calby on the board. Coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. Join us. Call or text at 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We are going on a road trip, baby.
Can't wait.
Matinair on Air and the Todd Alba Show hitting the road this summer. Join us on our summer road trip. We're going to stop in Oshkosh.
Mm-hmm.
In Butternut. And Hayward. Everywhere to talk about the EAA Air Venture. There's Packers training camp going on. There's Lumberjacks.
Okay.
In Hayward. You're going to get recruited. You know that.
Oh, and you're going to find out just how quickly I would die in the woods immediately.
Join us as we are on the road. Matinair on Air and Todd Alba Show, July 16th, 17th, and 18th. If you're going to be around the area, I hope you will stop out and say hello. We are hitting the road, summer 2025.
Yeah.
Right now, we're joined by Civic Media's political editor and the creator of the Recombobulation Area, Dan Schaefer, is here talking about the state budget before we went to the break. Where do we go from here? Is it a done? I mean, are we still? It's done, isn't it? Or they're still? No, they're still voting.
They're still voting today. I believe there are floor sessions for the Assembly and the Senate today. To vote on the state budget. But I'm expecting it to pass. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially after, you know, Governor Evers got behind it, legislative Republicans got behind it, and enough Democratic state senators are behind it. I'm expecting this budget to pass pretty comfortably.
And is this his statement on a third term?
He said he would let us know after the budget is done.
And this is a pretty gutsy budget. Like, if the way it was going, I was like, oh, I don't know. And now, I mean, this is not the work of him to specifically, but Senate Democrats. So, but is this a declaration, do you think, Dan? Dan Schaefer, do you think?
That's a good question. I obviously, you know where I stand.
Yeah.
When it comes to Evers running for a third term, I wrote a very extended piece on why I think he should not run for a third term. Go check that one out at the Recombobulation Area. Drop the paywall on it if you wanted to read the whole thing. But I do think I'm expecting him to announce for a third term.
Yeah.
I do think it's probably going to happen. I think he has, what is it, like 10 days to review the budget for line item vetoes. Part of the budget agreement that he would not touch any of the areas that they agreed upon with those line item vetoes. Republicans are pretty spooked after what he pulled 2 years ago.
They're very stung.
For sure. And so, you know, he's going to have some, I'm sure there will be something, though, that he will partial veto, maybe that was outside of the agreement, whatever it might be. So I expect that to come over the next few days and for, you know, the announcement probably to come shortly thereafter. I saw Jesse Apoyan from the Journal Sentinel mentioned the other day that in 2015, 10 years ago now, Scott Walker announced, signed his budget. I think it was also kind of a similar timeline, a little bit late into July. But then he, right at the day after signing the budget, he announced he would be running for president. So I wonder if that is a little bit of, you know, past his prologue
that's,
here.
That's interesting, though,
the timing.
Because when I think of Scott Walker in the 4th of July, I think of Scott Walker and the Republicans' efforts to gut the open records law while everybody was going off on vacation. Just kind of assuming that no one was going to notice this and we could just pass this on the holiday weekend. Yeah, that didn't happen. Nice try, though.
Yeah, but you know what's great? Mm-hmm. He lost in the primary and then he got booted out of office. So, you know,
pretty quick, too.
Double whammy win for Wisconsin.
Pretty quick. All right, we got about 2.5 minutes left. You have been retweeted by someone in very, very particular.
Yeah, I got retweeted by Giannis Antetokounmpo yesterday.
Yeah!
How about that?
That's amazing.
I'm Giannis adjacent.
How did this all happen?
So on Monday night, there was the free agency started for the NBA, and Brooke Lopez, one of my favorite all-time Milwaukee Bucks, was signed by the Los Angeles Clippers. Not a big surprise that he was going to be moving on after his contract ended. Signed a 2-year deal with the Clippers. Congrats to Brooke. But I was you know, just posting some memories of Brooke Lopez, and I said that Brooke Lopez should have his jersey retired in Milwaukee when it's all said and done. And Giannis quote tweeted it and said 1,000,000%. So we're all on board. We're getting Brooke Lopez's number 11 hanging from the rafters in Pfizer Forum. If Giannis and I have anything to say about it.
when you saw that come through, when you saw the notification, did you drop? I've had moments where people I really respect and love have either responded, retweeted, or in ultimate things, followed Missy Elliott, followed me, and I will throw my phone across the room and be like, well, I can't say anything anymore because now they're sort of in my life, and everything else just will be dumb.
You've reached like the pinnacle of Twitter, Dan, now.
Yeah.
I mean, the greatest basketball player of all time.
Retweeted me.
You know, I was thinking, how many people are in this club who have been retweeted by Giannis Antetokounmpo and Julie Louis-Dreyfus? Is it just me? Is this the exclusive club here?
I think in research of this question, we found it's a very specific parameter you've set for yourself.
I think there's room for a poster behind you that says just that. Retweeted by Giannis and Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
I'll frame it right over
there
here.
There you go.
President, vice president, and treasurer of the Julie Louis-Dreyfus Giannis Retweet Club.
Congratulations. Yeah. That's very exciting.
Thank you. Thank you. And a big day for the Milwaukee Bucks.
I was just going to ask.
Making a whole lot of moves.
Yeah.
My goodness.
You might catch me watching a game or two next season. I'm interested to see what they're doing. Is this new kid from Serbia, this 19-year-old, and some and good
the big
traits.
Signing yesterday was Miles Turner, signing him away from the emerging rival Indiana Pacers. So now the Bucks have another great replacement for Brook Lopez. It's going to be a fun season.
Dan Schaefer, our political editor and creator of the Recombobulation Area. Make sure you subscribe. It is fantastic. Thank you so much, my friend. We will see you next week.
Thanks for having me.
Stay with us.
Happy 4th.
Happy 4th. News coming up next. Keep it here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM. W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. A mixed verdict for Sean Diddy Combs as a New York City jury acquits him of sex trafficking and racketeering charges, but convicts him of prostitution-related charges. The judge had denied bail, and Combs will remain behind bars until his sentencing. Loyola Law School professor Lori Levinson.
It's probably an indication that the prosecutors are going to try to get as many years in prison as possible at the sentencing, saying that even though the conviction was only on the Mann Act, transporting someone across state lines for prostitution, when you look at the overall behavior of Sean Diddy Combs, he deserves the time in prison.
After Republican senators approved a budget bill to meet the Trump administration's fiscal